I'm Manila Chan. You're tuned into Modus Operandi. It's been an ugly year in Pakistan, politically and economically, following the arrest of the former Prime Minister Imran Khan. Unrest and chaos has unfolded, sparked by ongoing clashes of Khan supporters and the country's powerful military establishment. Tonight, we'll go straight to Lahore, Pakistan, Imran Khan's hometown, to find out what's really happening on the ground. All right, let's get into the MO. Imran Khan made himself a household name as a star cricketer, and perhaps that aided in his rise to power back in 2018 when he went from the cricket field to the political one. Founding the political party called Tehreek-e-Insaf, Khan was elected the country's prime minister, and by most polls, the most popular in Pakistan's history, until his ousting in 2022 that Khan alleges was Western-backed, a coup against him. Later, followed by an arrest that the former PM says are drummed-up charges against him. Now, his populist anti-establishment rhetoric often found him butting heads with the political elites of Pakistan, but wildly popular among its citizens. Many in the West drawing parallels between Khan and Donald Trump. Now, in a country of 220 million and an economy of 350 billion staving off debt default, Khan's future may be the key to Pakistan's future. To better explain all of these unfolding events on the ground, we'll go to Hamza Azhar Salam. He is the editor of Pakistan Daily. He's in Lahore, and he can fill us in. So, Hamza, first, tell us, what has transpired across Pakistan since the arrest of Imran Khan?
Pakistan has seen massive protests since Imran Khan's arrest on 9th May. There were a lot of violent incidents. We saw clashes between PTI workers and security personnel across Pakistan. And there was unprecedented events in Pakistan where PTI protesters attacked military installations across the country. We saw PTI protesters burning the Corps commander's house in Lahore on 9th May. And that place is considered to be the most secure place in all of Lahore, arguably in all of Punjab. And that place was ransacked by PTI supporters. We saw PTI workers take the personal belongings of the Corps, former Corps commander. We saw them burning the entire compound. We also saw them head towards the general headquarters in Rawalpindi, which is the headquarters of the Pakistani military. And so the situation was so intense that ultimately the authorities had to release Imran Khan in order to ensure order in Pakistan.
Yeah, and Khan's release on bail was extended to June 19 when he's expected to return to jail, presumably, right, awaiting trial. Now, this is the second extension since his May 9 arrest. Do you foresee other extensions for him? And are there concerns that more mass protests or perhaps violence may erupt if he is incarcerated?
Well, yes, absolutely. I think that there is a risk of mass protests if Imran Khan is arrested again. And so far, we've seen the protests quell down. And a lot of leaders in Imran Khan's party, the Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf, have said goodbye to Imran, purportedly because of pressure from the country's powerful establishment. So in terms of mobilization of workers, yes, there is a dent as far as PTI is concerned. But there's a huge risk that the situation may get out of control, because what we saw on the 9th of May was completely unprecedented in the history of Pakistan, where followers of a political party so boldly attack military installations. And so I think that it is possible that even though an arrest may be warranted by the courts, but an arrest cannot be implemented because still Imran Khan enjoys a lot of power in relevant quarters. A lot of people have claimed that the Chief Justice of Pakistan holds a lot of sympathies for Imran Khan. So yes, I think it is quite possible that his arrest is either averted or delayed until the domestic security situation is controlled, and it can be ensured that his arrest will not cause any violent reactions. Because even recently, we've seen Imran Khan actively take on the military establishment, and he has said that it was very natural for his supporters to protest outside military installations. And though he has condemned the violence which occurred and the cases of arson which occurred, but still, once protesters go to such places and tensions are high, tempers start flaring, one thing leads to another, and I think Pakistan's security institutions still don't have a very clear idea about what would happen if Imran Khan is rearrested.
Well, how many people, how many protesters would you estimate?
Well, there's been tens of thousands of protesters protesting for Imran Khan. But since he was released, the numbers have dwindled down. But the thing about Imran Khan's protesters are that they come out across the country. So there's going to be 3,000 protesters in Peshawar in a particular area. There's going to be 5,000 protesters in Lahore, possibly moving towards Kent if he is rearrested. There could be a few thousand in Rawalpindi, which is the headquarters of the Pakistani army. There could be thousands of protesters in the red zone in Islamabad, outside the parliament or the Supreme Court or the Prime Minister's office. So it's not about huge numbers or hundreds of thousands of people taking to the streets, but it's about a few thousand people who coordinate, who are continuously in touch with each other, and who protest strategically. So a few thousand people across the country can cause a lot of damage, and have already caused a lot of damage to state property. We saw Radio Pakistan's building in Peshawar being burnt the next day when the Corps Commander's house was burnt. So we've seen a strategy in terms of these protesters, which may not be that many numerically, but they can punch above their weight using this strategy.
All right, I see. So not necessarily just masses of protesters in one location, but rather thousands across many cities at the same time. So what exactly are the charges that he's facing, and why is his wife also implicated?
Well, currently Imran Khan is facing over 80 cases, but he was arrested in the Al-Qadir Trust case. Now, the Al-Qadir Trust case pertains to a bribe, a purported bribe, Imran Khan was given by Pakistan's leading property tycoon Malik Riaz Hussain, who is the chairman of Beria Town. Now, the background to the story is that the United Kingdom's National Crime Agency, the NCA, fined Malik Riaz £190 million, which was supposed to be given back to the state of Pakistan. But the charges against Imran Khan are that he, using his team, a cabinet member in his team, he gave the money back to Malik Riaz so he could pay an unrelated fine to the Supreme Court of Pakistan. Now, the Supreme Court of Pakistan has also fined Malik Riaz for irregularities in Beria Town, Karachi. And that fine is in the tune of $460 billion, which is over $2 billion, by the way. And Malik Riaz has not paid the entirety of that fine. But Imran Khan is accused of taking land from the Al-Qadir Trust from Malik Riaz in order to help Malik Riaz get back this £190 million and pay it in an unrelated fine. Now, the Al-Qadir Trust is basically a university which is not fully operational or functional, but it has a lot of prime real estate, hundreds of canals, which is worth a very significant amount. Now, initially, only Imran Khan and his wife and some other PTI leaders, including Zulfi Bukhari and Babar Awan, were trustees in the Al-Qadir Trust. But eventually, everybody else was removed as trustees, and only Bushra Bibi, who is Imran Khan's wife, and Imran Khan himself, only these two remained as trustees. And there's also some evidence in terms of leaked audio calls, which suggests that Imran Khan's wife purportedly extorted property tycoon Malik Riaz for diamond rings. There's a talk of a 5-carat diamond ring, which was given to Bushra Bibi via Farah Gogi, who is also a close associate of Imran Khan and Bushra Bibi, a very close friend. She's been photographed with the former First Lady. So because of the link with Bushra Bibi and because there's evidence which suggests direct involvement of Bushra Bibi, this is why she is also being charged. And Pakistani investigators believe that they have enough evidence to convict her in a court of law.
Wow. Okay. So the former First Lady, we'll call her, can also be in a lot of hot water here. Pakistan's military, it's very powerful, both externally as a fighting force, but also domestically. They carry a lot of influence in the country's politics. Khan has made some very strong statements regarding them and has said his removal as PM was a coup d'etat organized by the West. His supporters seem to agree with that sentiment. What should we know about this? I mean, Khan and his relationship with the military powers in Pakistan.
Well, it's very interesting because, as you mentioned, the Pakistani military is all powerful in Pakistan. They're the most powerful domestic force, stronger than any political party, any court of law, or any other institution. So they hold ultimate power. Pakistan has been directly ruled by the military for more than half of its time since inception. But even when it's not directly ruled, it is assumed that they are still the ones controlling the entire state machinery. So that being said, in 2018, when Imran Khan became prime minister, his critics accused him of being a puppet of the Pakistani military. And if you look at his interviews and his narratives, in 2018 till 2020 and 2021, you may consider Imran Khan as an apologist for Pakistan's all-powerful military. On national television, he used to justify tappings of his own phone calls by intelligence services. And his critics have called him a selected prime minister, alleging that he was selected by the military establishment to rule Pakistan. Now, Imran Khan's relationship with the military has soured post-2021, and there's certain instances which have contributed in ruining this very strong relationship. And one instance which I think is not talked about quite so much is Imran Khan's insistence of having General Faiz Hamid as Pakistan's DGISI. Now, the DGISI is also a very powerful figure in Pakistan who is capable of conducting political engineering on behalf of a prime minister. So sources believe that the removal of General Faiz as DGI in Pakistan contributed to Imran Khan's deterioration in the relationship with the military. Now, after the vote of confidence happened and Imran Khan was removed, initially, Imran Khan alleged a U.S. conspiracy to remove him from power. But later on, as months passed, we saw Imran Khan taking a U-turn on allegations of a U.S. conspiracy. And we've seen Imran Khan reaching out to the U.S. for help against Pakistan's military. We've seen Imran Khan writing letters to a U.S. congressman. We've seen people from Imran Khan's party, and we have evidence for this, that they've hired the ex-CIA station chief in Islamabad, Robert Grenier, for lobbying on behalf of Imran Khan in Washington. So right now, currently, you won't hear Imran Khan talking about the U.S. or any foreign conspiracy. Right now, Imran Khan's target is only one, and that is Pakistan's military.
All right, coming up next, Pakistan with a who shot JFK mystery of their very own. We'll discuss it when we return with Hamza Azhar Salam. Sit tight, the MO will be right back.
Wrong. When all rules just don't hold, And a new world that is yet to shape out, disdain becomes the etiquette, and engagement equals betrayal. When so many find themselves worlds apart, we choose to look for common ground.
Четвертого числа сказали, война, собираемся, все едем.
У каждого была какая-то своя точка переломная, точка невозврата, так можно сказать.
Здесь все совсем другое. Здесь все быстро и просто.
От России никто не отворачивался. Мы с ней и росли, мы с ней и жили.
Русским был, есть и буду.
Здесь не просто мужчины, здесь лучшие люди, не лучше нас.
Уход! Уход!
Все будет хорошо. Прорвемся.
Вариантов-то нет. Надо до конца добивать все это мероприятие. Иначе будет только хуже.
Реально бояться можно. Прям можно бояться. Ну, трусить нельзя. Лучше мы будем здесь воевать, чем они придут туда, к нам домой.
Hi, I'm Rick Sanchez. And I'm here to plead with you, whatever you do, do not watch my new show. Seriously, why watch something that's so different? Why listen to opinions that you won't get anywhere else? Look, if it pleases you to have the State Department, the CIA, weapons makers, multi-billion dollar corporations choose your facts for you, go ahead. Why change? And whatever you do, don't watch my show. Stay mainstream, because I'm probably going to make you uncomfortable. My show is called Direct Impact. But again, you probably don't want to watch it, because it might just change the way you think.
Welcome back to The MO. I'm Manila Chan. Some 60 years ago, U.S. President John F. Kennedy was shot dead in Dallas, Texas. To this day, swirling mystery around that dark day in U.S. history still exists. Documents still withheld by the U.S. government. Now, a new similar mystery in Pakistan, but lucky for Imran Khan, without a deadly ending. Hamza Azhar Salam is back with us. Thank you so much for staying with us, Hamza. So a few months back, while at a political rally, Imran Khan was shot. Reportedly, a lone gunman was taken into custody. You know, Khan survived, obviously, the bullets hitting his leg. He claims this was an assassination attempt. What can you tell us about that case so far? Was it politically motivated?
Well, personally, I have no doubts that it was politically motivated. And when that assassination attempt happened, Imran Khan's party was still ruling Punjab. Punjab is the most popular province of Pakistan, and the police was under Imran Khan's own administration. But Imran Khan was unable to register a case or an FIR, as we call a first information report, in regards to this assassination attempt, because he named a senior intelligence official, the DGC at the ISI, who is considered to be one of the most powerful men of the country. Now, because he named a two-star major general, police refused to register his case. Now, that tells us a lot about how the investigations happened. And a lone gunman was arrested. But our sources were also present during this assassination attempt, and the Pakistan Daily itself investigated this assassination attempt, and there's too many loopholes in the state's version. So Imran Khan was purportedly shot three times. There's other people who were shot, and there's a person who died also. So the state says that there was a lone gunman who shot all these people with a pistol, while even in videos we can hear some automatic burst fire suggesting that it may have been an AK-47. And many people believe that there wasn't one gunman, and there may have been multiple shooters, but they are being protected. But this story is so controversial that you won't see it on Pakistani media, and you won't hear Pakistani investigative journalists investigating this story, because, you know, it is now it is buried in the ground. And even Imran Khan is not talking about that assassination attempt. anymore, because perhaps that was a warning for him, you know, to change his course. Otherwise, in Pakistan, prime ministers and foreign prime ministers have been killed like flies. You talk about Liaquat Ali Khan, the first prime minister, he was killed. You talk about Zulfikar Ali Bhutto, he was hanged to death. You talk about Benazir Bhutto, who was also killed. So you'll see a long list of prime ministers and ex-prime ministers who have been killed. And I think and I hope Imran Khan does not join that list.
Wow. So this really does sound like Pakistan's own JFK mystery, multiple gunmen, the cover-ups, and so on. If it's anything like the U.S., you still won't know the facts, even 60 years on, unfortunately. Now, Pakistan obviously plays a vital role in U.S. foreign policy, especially in the way of counterterrorism. What was Pakistan's relationship with the U.S. under Khan as PM, and has it changed since he was deposed?
Well, initially, Khan was considered anti-American, and we saw the relationship deteriorate. We saw President Trump tweeting a thread about Pakistan, about military aid to Pakistan, which really negatively impacted the Pakistan-U.S. dynamic. But then we saw a lot of outreach, and we saw Prime Minister Khan go to the U.S., address massive crowds, have a wonderful meeting with President Trump. We saw President Trump praise Imran Khan, calling him a great athlete. And we were very hopeful about a good relationship between the Pakistan and the U.S. But I think that the Pakistan-U.S. dynamic is not entirely dependent on Pakistani prime ministers and their personal likings or dislikings. But I think the relationship has suffered after the U.S. and NATO exited Afghanistan, because Pakistan was the United States' primary partner in the war on terror, at least in this region, in Afghanistan, because we were their neighbors. We were giving them a lot of support. But after the U.S. withdrew from Afghanistan, Pakistani officials believe that Pakistan's value has significantly diminished in U.S. quarters. And Pakistani diplomats believe that they don't have that kind of sway in Washington anymore. And even though Prime Minister Khan was unable to get a meeting or a phone call with President Biden and Prime Minister Sharif, he did come to Washington, did have a meeting, did have that photo op suggesting that relations have improved. But as far as things on the ground are concerned, it does seem that the relationship has significantly deteriorated. And considering that Pakistan is going through a severe economic crisis right now, the U.S. was considered to be Pakistan's ultimate ally who would bail us out no matter how bad things went. But now, you know, we're seeing minimal to no support from the U.S., causing many people in Pakistan, especially policymakers who make our economic policy, look towards China rather than the U.S. as Pakistan's main economic partner.
Yeah, speaking of your economy, currently, Pakistan's economic crisis is worsening. Recently, the new prime minister, Shehbaz Sharif, contacted the IMF requesting the managing director revive the deal to loan the country $6.5 billion U.S. dollars. Can you give us some idea of what the economy in Pakistan looks like lately, at least for the average Pakistani? And has former PM Khan made any remarks on this?
Well, Manila, if you ask me and the average Pakistani, more than the political crisis, there's an economic crisis going on in Pakistan, which impacts every Pakistani's life. And there's 250 million Pakistanis, so the world needs to understand that this is a big country with a lot of people. Now, Pakistan is currently facing yearly inflation of around 40%. Our rupee, our currency, has devalued over 45% against the dollar since last year. So as an import-based economy, this has ruined our economy. Our GDP growth has fallen. The investor sentiment has fallen to an all-time low. And even though we've seen, you know, recent strides and, you know, recent positive developments in regards to the rupee performing well against the dollar, overall, if you look at the last 12-month period or the last 15-month period, the economic situation has deteriorated beyond anyone's expectation or imagination. And now, Prime Minister Sharif has reached out to the IMF, and I also spoke to Pakistan's finance minister not so long ago, and Pakistan's finance ministry believes that the IMF is changing its goalposts as soon as Pakistan fulfills all their previous conditions. They suddenly impose new conditions. Now, in Islamabad, there are talks which suggest that perhaps geopolitical factors may be behind the IMF's reluctance to sign the staff-level agreement Pakistan desperately needs. Because before, it was very clear, and IMF officials had also spoken with Pakistani media and Pakistani journalists, and they had said that the last point remaining in the staff-level agreement was sovereign guarantees from Gulf states. Now, after Pakistan got those sovereign guarantees and confirmed that they would be able to fulfill their future financial commitments, the IMF asking for new things seems like a friend who doesn't want to help you. And I think that Pakistani authorities and the new Pakistani government is prepared for a post-IMF world. The budget will come in a few days. And like I said, we were closely in touch with the finance ministry, and they are prepared to work without the IMF. They have their relevant safeguards in store. And even though they fear more devaluation or more inflation and a hike in the interest rates, they're prepared to pay this price. And I think that Pakistani authorities and the new Pakistani government is now refusing to get blackmailed by the IMF or any other lender of last resort.
Yeah, definitely sounds like tough times for the average Pakistani citizen, similar to the complaints that we're hearing here in the U.S. as well. My friend Hamza Azhar Salam, editor of the Pakistan Daily, thank you so much for this detailed explanation of these still unfolding events.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so as you can see, a still very tenuous situation in Pakistan. Will Khan be rearrested following expiration of bail? According to Khan, he seems certain that he will be tried in a military court that will ultimately destroy his political party that he founded, and then he'll get locked up behind bars for years. Now, that's what he's talking to the press about lately. Pakistan's future, still very uncertain at this point. That is going to do it for this episode of Modus Operandi, the show that digs deep into foreign policy and current affairs. I'm your host, Manila Chan. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you again next time to figure out the MO.